Tuesday, September 17th. Again, London has been bombed. Two morning attacks followed a furious all-night German assault on the British capital. Sources in Vichy, France, say that British planes have heavily attacked German shipping along the English Channel. And in Washington, America's conscription machinery goes into action to be ready for the October 16th registration date set by President Roosevelt. This morning, the Columbia Broadcasting System again calls in its foreign correspondents for latest reports from world capitals. Eric Severide will report from London, Edwin Hartridge from Berlin, and Albert Warner from our own nation's capital. While we are waiting for the report of Mr. Severide from London, here is more news about the report from Vichy. The attacks by Royal Air Force planes on German shipping in the Channel were said to have been made at Le Havre, Boulogne, Calais, Dunkirk, and Ostend, and the attackers were said to have been almost continuous for 24 hours. The Vichy statement was that British bombers had dived on the German vessels until they seemed almost to touch the tops of their masts. A United Press report from Vichy also says that German Reich Marshal Goering has established his headquarters in the Seine Valley of Normandy. Goering is directing the German raids on Britain. Here is the latest news from Rome, where an official communique now claims that Italian troops invading Egypt have met stiff British resistance amid desert sandstorms in the vicinity of Sidi Barani, 60 miles inside Egyptian territory. And now, the news from the British capital, as reported by Mr. Severide. Go ahead, London.
This is London. We've had two raid warnings so far today, and it's now 1 in the afternoon. The raids were on virtually all night long again. The first alarm after daybreak came at 8 o'clock when a single spotter plane approached the capital. Except for one or two time bombs from last night, I've heard no explosions yet this morning in central London. The raid last night was very heavy, particularly in West London. The attack was continual, and so was the anti-aircraft barrage, which sounded like the heaviest of any night so far. Bombs seem to be dropping everywhere in London, and this morning's communique more or less confirms this. Once more, a hospital was hit, but we're informed there were no casualties this time. The communique this morning says casualties in London as a whole were not very large. Just before midnight, when the raid was at its height, one German bomber ran into the cable of a barrage balloon and was destroyed. One popular shopping center was hit last night, a fashionable residential quarter, and one big London square. I was sitting last night in the lobby of a big hotel when there was a muffled crash, and glass in the next room began raining down on the carpet, and water from burst pipes in the upper bedrooms poured down on top of the glass. The heavy chandeliers swung violently back and forth. There were about 100 people in the lobby, and everyone jumped from his chair and milled around for a couple of minutes before it occurred to them to run down into the shelter. The bomb had taken a corner off the hotel at the fourth floor, and in a moment there was a parade of pajama-clad guests carrying their pillows coming down the stairway. Within about 3 minutes, everybody was calm once more. They showed far more annoyance when they were all set out of the hotel because a time bomb had been discovered nearby. And not far away, there was a fire. The firemen had been working on it for only a few minutes when the raider came back again and killed several of these men. Hitler's plans for invading this country have to take into account not only the nightly RAF bombing of his ports, but the well-known foul weather of the British Isles. Yesterday down in the Channel, there was heavy mist and big waves. And this morning, the report from Dover is about the same, only worse. All through the night, the wind was increasing in the straits. And around dawn today, a small gale was blowing rain along the coast. Some weather experts this morning predicted a full gale with heavy seas before the day is over. Despite the RAF attack, Hitler's concentration of shipping for the expected attempt is still going on. We're told that reconnaissance by British flying observers now indicates that the Germans are working overtime repairing the boats in the docks, which had been smashed in the last few nights. Here in London, the search for a solution to the shelter problem is still going on. More and more people from the worst hit areas are migrating westward. The Minister of Home Security, Sir John Anderson, is still opposed to building deep public shelters because he maintains they would take many months to construct and would use up too much building material needed elsewhere. He contends that the surface shelters made of brick and concrete are just as safe and intends to go on building them. Except in a sudden daylight raid now, very few Londoners will use these shelters. They are scarcely fit for spending a whole night. They are unheated so far, and most people do believe they are unsafe. Anderson is also opposed to people crowding all night in the subway stations. He is now taking photographs of the surface shelters, which will be published in an effort to demonstrate that they are quite safe. The East Enders, of course, have suffered most. But with these night raids now covering great areas of central and west London, they aren't the only class of people suddenly made homeless. Three members of the cabinet so far have had narrow escapes and for a time have no homes. The Admiralty announces this morning that for the week ending September 9th, 16 ships totaling 54,547 tons were sunk. This is somewhat above the average for the previous 52 weeks. I return you now to CBS New York.
Back in our New York studios, here is a press association dispatch from Ottawa. Dominion members of the Canadian-United States Joint Defense Board leave by plane in a few hours for a detailed inspection of Pacific Coast defenses. The survey will include the northwestern United States, British Columbia, and Alaska. But now, the news from the German capital, as reported by Edwin Hartridge. Go ahead, Berlin.
This is Berlin. German planes have resumed their reconnaissance flights this morning, according to a late announcement by the Day and Day. These operations are described as armed reconnaissance flights, and whether this means any attendant bombing or just survey work, we can't exactly say. So far, the Germans state that the operations today have been most successful so far. The fires have been observed in the London area, where war industries and other centers necessary for the maintenance of life in London are located. Serrano Sunier, the number two man in the Franco government of Spain, was received by Herr Hitler this morning. The conference lasted about an hour. Senor Sunier, who is the brother-in-law of General Franco and Minister of Interior in his cabinet, no doubt carries diplomatic power of attorney with him to speak for Franco Spain and to make any commitments he sees fit to do so. This visit of the Spanish minister to Berlin is important. For one thing, the future position of Spain as regards to this war will no doubt be clarified. We correspondents know General Franco has been clamoring for the return of Gibraltar from the British, as well as making frequent reference to, quote, a colonial empire of Spain, end of quote. And the Germans are also eager to dislodge the British from their powerful naval base at Gibraltar. So we believe that Senor Sunier and Herr von Ribbentrop at least see eye to eye on that problem. A Foreign Office spokesman explained this morning that the Spanish minister is not here to discuss internal affairs, but, quote, matters of greater importance, unquote. And the spokesman added that this visit should not be underestimated. There's one concrete result of the visit made known so far. Direct telephone communications between Spain and Germany, which have been broken off for 4 years since the start of the Spanish Civil War, have just been resumed. Another important visitor arrived in Berlin last night. General Terruzzi, the Italian Minister of Colonies, who has come to confer with German authorities. However, just what is on the agenda for the conference is not known publicly. As you know, we were told that on Sunday evening, Reichsmarshal Goering, the commander-in-chief of the German Air Force, made a secret and surprise flight over London in the Junkers 88 bomber, accompanied by an escort of two destroyer planes. The Reichsmarshal is reported to have wisecracked on his return, quote, now Winston Churchill can make a flying visit to Berlin, end of quote. However, there's one interesting aftermath. This morning, the German or Berlin papers make no mention of this story. Apparently, the news was only released the foreign correspondents last night. And speaking of the bombing of London, there are unconfirmed reports that shortly the Germans are to use a new bomb of great weight. The largest bomb now used is 1,800 kilos, or almost 4,000 pounds each, from what information we have here. And as one German news commentator remarked the other day, we are not dropping bombs loaded with whipped cream. Incidentally, bombs weighing 1,800 kilos were first tried out in Spain. The bombardment of Barcelona in the closing stages of the Spanish Civil War was one of the experiments. And in 3 days, over 3,500 people were killed. However, not all of those deaths were attributed to these big bombs, but their use came as a great shock to the defense forces of the Catalan capital. This morning, thousands of Berlin households found a leaflet in their mailboxes. It was issued by the Bund for Germans Abroad and was both a warning and a notice regarding the relationship between Germans and conquered Poles. The leaflet explained that the Greater Reich has of necessity to include many foreign elements. And after explaining that the Poles are now working in Germany on the farms and as industrial laborers, the leaflet warns about, quote, the dangers arising from living side by side with a foreign people, end of quote. It adds, the servility of the Poles to the German farmers is cunning. His friendly behavior is deceitful. Caution must prevail not to further the unification of the Poles and to prevent their spying. Above all, there is no community of interest whatsoever to
between the Germans and Poles. End of quote. And the leaflet closes with the warning, Germans, the Pole can never be your comrade. He is inferior to each German, whether on the farm or in the plant. Be just as Germans are, but never forget you are a member of a master people. End of quote. Incidentally, Polish workers in Germany must wear a special identification mark on their left breast. It is a square turned on its edge with a violet edge and a yellow center in which is described a capital P. This is Edwin Hartridge, our returning out of Columbia in New York.
And now the news from our own nation's capital, as reported by Albert Warner. We take you now to Washington.
Congress is not in session today, but quietly a four-man contest is underway for the Democratic floor leadership of the House. Representative John McCormick of Massachusetts has considerable opposition from at least three other Democratic members of the House. The contest arises as a result of the elevation of Representative Sam Rayburn of Texas to be Speaker of the House to succeed the late Speaker William B. Bankhead. A great many of the House leaders have gone by train with the President to the funeral services of Mr. Bankhead at Jasper, Alabama, today. On their return trip to Washington, it may be that the floor leadership will be determined. Besides Mr. McCormick, the principal candidates are Jerry Cooper of Tennessee, Clifton Woodrum of Virginia, and Patrick Boland of Pennsylvania. If Mr. McCormick should be chosen, it would take the Democratic floor leadership away from the South for the first time in a considerable period. Except for Speaker Henry Rainey, the House in recent years has had Southerners at its head. Jack Garner, Joseph Burns, Mr. Bankhead, and Mr. Rayburn, all of whom were floor leaders before they became speakers. Mr. McCormick represents a low-income district in South Boston. He's a lawyer, a Catholic, a supporter of labor legislation, and almost always a supporter of the New Deal. But he voted for the Fish Amendment to the draft bill. And he also led a successful move to get rid of the undivided corporate profits tax when the administration was reluctant to move. There's talk of postponing a decision. Some seekers of party harmony think McCormick might be beaten and Northern Democrats irritated. One proposal is to make an acting House leader out of Lindsey Warren of North Carolina, who is slated to become Comptroller General at the end of the year. That would put off permanent choice until January. The tempo of defense preparation increases in this country, even as the tempo of war attains a higher beat in Europe. This is the situation today as a result of developments which extended into last night. 35,000 additional National Guardsmen are called out for active service on October 15th, 16th. With those who began their duty yesterday, almost 100,000 Guardsmen are beginning a year's service. The new group comes from five states, New York, Ohio, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Mississippi. The Guardsmen in the strategic islands of Puerto Rico in the Caribbean and Hawaii in the Pacific are also among those just called out. Then on October 16th comes Registration Day under the Conscription Bill. Around November 15th, the first contingent of almost 100,000 men will report to camps. By the month of January, 400,000 will be in service. Then also the program of recruiting the regular army up to 375,000 men will proceed. In other words, in January, a total of more than 1 million men will be in army camps in the program of national defense. In the realm of materiel, the War Department announces that 6,800 airplanes have been ordered under the July 1 appropriation and the new $5 billion defense fund. So we build machines and manpower. But one old war machine is still in use, the horse. The War Department hasn't given up horse cavalry. It wants to buy 20,000 horses, most of which will be turned over to the Guard. And they say Hitler's army hasn't given up the horse, though you don't hear much about it. Poland, by the way, had a good horse cavalry. We return you now to New York.
With these reports from London by Eric Severide, from Berlin by Edwin Hartridge, and from Washington by Albert Warner, Columbia brings to a close another broadcast of important world developments. George Bryan speaking. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.